And by the way, we're down the rabbit hole here. We've passed up all of the stuff that I had planned. So that means we're down the rabbit hole, and that means who knows where the conversation is going to get us. But we have a special background for Down the Rabbit Hole, and we have special graphics and sound.
Down the rabbit hole. Down the rabbit hole. Down the rabbit hole.
That's right. We are down the rabbit hole now. That means anything goes. We do that for people who just tune in for the stuff that I have prepared. But I did want to remind you of this from George Washington, who predicted the rise of Donald J. Trump in his farewell address when he warned Americans not to become so addicted to the party system. When he said, "The disorders and miseries which gradually result in the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual, and sooner or later the chief of some prevailing faction," faction is another word for party, "more able or more fortunate than his competitors, turns this disposition to the purpose of his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty." George Washington, farewell address, predicting the rise and tactics of Donald J. Trump. Michael says, "I wanted to talk about Utah employment." Yeah, we went through the hiring crisis. Anything you want to add to that, you are welcome. And I will absolutely look at it and consider it if I'm familiar with it. And while you're doing that, please take a minute and go to jmcfarland.com. Become a member of the JMAC Members Club. $5 a month or more will give you access to great benefits depending on what level you come in, like my books, webinars, all kinds of stuff. Merch. There's JMAC merch. But more than anything, it helps me continue to bring this stream to you on a regular basis. And you again, get access to content that I don't release to everybody. So take a minute and go to jmcfarland.com and do that. Michael says, "I'll do it right. I do it right now and events." So yeah, go. So do you guys like the rabbit hole background today? G-Hub says, "Have you followed the Rittenhouse trial at all, or do you plan on talking about it at all? Looks like jury needed an extra day." I was asked about this on Thursday night, and honestly, I haven't. And I'm realizing after the fact I should have, so I'll probably go back and watch what I can. This is not a cut-and-dry case, I will tell you that. And so I'm not sure how the jury is going to respond. I can tell you that unless it's a hung jury, one side or the of the aisle or the other is going to be very upset. And so it's a very divisive issue, but I haven't watched. I've seen clips from this judge who does weird things, and I think it can be made, the case can be made, and I'm speculating here, I haven't watched enough of it, but that he is kind of in favor of Rittenhouse and what he did. It's quite the story, and I guess I didn't see it coming, and like I should have, and so I haven't been following like I should have. So Michael says, "We can't do events because of the insurance and COVID, but we are expected to keep going on. Thoughts and prayers. Meanwhile, info, techno." Yeah, we've been talking about the side effects from COVID. And we had somebody on the show the other night, Michael, who was calling it gouging, that because you can't hire people or because the supply chain is affected that you raise your prices. And I had to explain to them what nonsense that is. Gouging is, you know, when people are trying to get out of the area with a hurricane and you raise your prices to $100 a gallon because you can in that moment. But what people fail to understand because they haven't been in business is that if you can't get a product, so then you can't sell that product, you still, all of your base costs stay the same. And this is what people don't realize. You still have the rent. Your rent didn't go down. Your electricity didn't go down. If you're trying to stay staffed, your employment didn't go down. Your own needs, if you're living off of your business, didn't go down. Your own business and expenses didn't go down. So how do you recoup those costs? There's only one way to do it. You raise your prices. There's no other way to do it. Or you start laying off, or you start, you know, not paying your bills and your creditors go after you. So, you know, that whole idea, people just don't understand the domino effect that is happening right now because of supply chain, because of COVID, because of the hiring crisis, all of those things. Michael says, so here is a huge problem. We have kept wages low in Utah for an artificially long time. You can't get an apartment alone for 1,600 plus utilities. We are a right to work and free. We used to be a right to work state and free or slave labor, hiring contractors, getting labor from Home Depot and other things. David says people want to drive to conclusions too early on both sides in the case. Yeah, with Rittenhouse for sure. And let's be honest, David, with Rittenhouse, most people decided whether or not they support him or whether or not what he did was criminal. They decided it on day one, before the trial, before anything else. And the trial is not going to change their opinion. All they did is they decided. Now they want the verdict that they decided, and they're going to be very upset if they don't get that verdict, right? Michael says, in order to get businesses or employees, we need to do events, and we can't do that right now. $24 an hour for Salt Lake City is still poverty for a single person. Yeah, I don't. The only thing I can tell you is that the hiring crisis is doing what no government has done in Utah or any other state, and that is it's raising the minimum wage. I shared at the beginning of this show, it's now up, according to the last study I saw, the average entry-level wage is now $15 to $17 an hour. Not the $24 that you're looking for, but the supply and demand right now in employment is driving wages way up, like no government mandate would have done, because the mandates would not have come up. Changes in minimum wage wouldn't have taken, would not have gone up. To, I guarantee in Utah, not up to 15 or 17. Maybe if Biden had his way, it would have gone up to 15. But you're now seeing that happen as a direct result of the hiring crisis. Michael says 12 at office max. Well, it depends on the location. Some places are more desirable to work than others. I can tell you some of the fast food places around here are hiring at 15. So it just depends on the individual company's ability to hire. So one place may be getting employees at 12 and another place, because nobody wants to work at that place or that type of job, is having to go up to 15 to 17. Michael says they have $11 an hour at Home Garden, nine at Kohler's. I think it was Cafe Rio I just saw. We were pretty amazed at the price. It was like $14 an hour. Michael Tanner says, where can you live full-time for that $15 an hour? Well, Michael, I mean, we're in the rabbit hole, but I've never believed that the goal of a minimum wage should be a living wage. I've never believed that. I agree we have a housing crisis here. But if the goal of the housing crisis is to make sure that you can afford rent on minimum wage, that's not to me the viable direction. I am not a supporter of the concept of the minimum wage being a living wage. The entry-level wage is an entry-level wage for one reason, and that's because of supply and demand. And to put an expectation on an entry-level wage that somehow you're supposed to support yourself on your own on that wage, to me, is not a good direction to go. It's just not. And I can tell you that as long as I've lived, I have never once thought in my life that I could live in an apartment on my own on minimum wage. And when I did live in an apartment, when I was making, I only made minimum wage for 3 months of my life, but when I was living in an apartment on a lower wage, I had three roommates. And so to me, it's when you start adding those artificial things into a business, you destroy commerce. And so while I am in favor of certain types of a minimum wage, I do not support the idea that it should be a living wage or that you should be able to rent an apartment on your own for the minimum wage. That to me is an undue burden on employers. Employers do not start businesses so that they can provide for you a living wage so that by virtue of your birth out of the womb, whoop, you can afford to raise a family on a living wage. That is an artificial requirement that I do not believe is healthy in our society. I just don't believe it. He says, by the way, historically was the way it was to be. Minimum wage was a living wage at one time. I do not support the idea. I think that if you want to support a family, then you should advance the desirability that people have for you in whatever way that you can, through experience, through education, through whatever else. Employers are competing for you when there are thousands and thousands and thousands of you available, then people will work for lower and lower wages because they want a job. We are seeing now in a hiring crisis when there are fewer and fewer and fewer available, they have to pay more. It is and what they pay is not a function of whether or not you can live off of it. It's a function of whether or not they can pay their bills and still make a profit on it. So how do you even calculate that if you're an employer? How do you even do that? So to me, it's a dangerous thing, and I've never supported the idea that you should be able to support yourself or your family off of that entry-level wage. It should be exactly what it is, an entry-level wage, where you start. And the incentive and the motivation should be to try and make yourself more desirable to employers in any way that you can. And I'm somebody who does not have a degree. I did not get my high school diploma. I got a GED last year. And I'm not going to tell you that because I did it, everybody can do it. But I did do it. And I made minimum wage for 30 days. And after that, I got my first increase. And I've never looked back. And that's the way I believe that it should be. I don't think that what you're doing, this to me is what you're doing. When you say that an employer has to pay a living wage, you are making employers into a social welfare program. And then they can no longer make decisions based upon business metrics. They have to now make decisions based upon social welfare metrics. And I believe that if you want to provide benefits or social welfare programs or anything else, then you do not put that burden on the backs of employers. You tax everybody and you provide those. So if you think that paid family leave for a month should be something that employees should get, then tax everybody and pay it out of the government coffers. When you make employers pay it, what you're doing is you're making employees more costly. And there is a direct ramification for that. The more expensive employees get, the fewer that a company can hire, depending on their profit structure. And the more they're going to search ways to not have employees or to make employees do more work than one employee should do. That's what happens when you turn businesses into social welfare programs. And that's what the living wage is, in my opinion. It's making a business not there to make a profit, but there to provide a minimum living condition for somebody. That is not the job of a business. A job of a business, by definition, is to make money. Now, we don't want them to abuse people. We don't want them to take advantage. But the thing that people seem to forget is that nobody makes companies pay more than minimum wage. Nobody. There is no law that says that somebody has to be paid $65,000 a year entry level for tech. There is no law that says that architects come out of school and they get paid $120,000 a year to start. There is no law. There's no need for a law. Because businesses compete for those individuals. So businesses are glad to pay for a value that they are being received, that they are receiving as a business. They're more than willing to pay more if you bring more. And that's the metric that should be employed. Not can you survive on your own on this wage. That to me is a dangerous philosophy. And it ultimately will hurt the employee more, in my opinion, because the employee becomes more and more and more expensive. And the more expensive you become, the less employable you are. So if you have a huge expense on your head and you don't bring anything more than an entry-level skill set to the table, then what the government is doing in trying to help you is they're actually de-incentivizing you being hired. So you got to be really, really careful with this whole living wage stuff. Let's see. Michael Tanner says, how long should that wage be? Most people on minimum wage are 37. To me, time is not a factor. The factor is, what value do you bring to the company? What value? And this is a message that is not shared with people. What value can I bring to this business so that they pay me more? That is the equation. What value? I would like to raise a family someday. So in order to raise a family, instead of starting that family and then demanding that the government and my employer pay for it, I'm going to improve my value to businesses so that I can get to a point where I can raise a family and have more than that. That's the equation. Michael Tanner says, corporate welfare is so much better. That you accuse me of straw men. Corporate welfare is an entirely different discussion. And it's a discussion that we can have. But because corporate welfare exists is not a reason why somebody should have a living wage. They both need to be discussed separately. Michael Tanner says, so there should be no minimum wage. Well, let me ask you something. Let's say I have an idea for a product. I have an idea for a widget. This is my widget, okay? And I can make the widget for just enough to sell it for a profit, but only if I can find somebody to work for $1 an hour. If I find somebody who's willing, some person who is retired, likes doing the work, and they want to work for $1 an hour. Should I be able to pay them $1 an hour if they're willing to do it? See, I think if you look, and right now in the hiring crisis, there's a perfect example. If you look, most of the jobs, the entry-level jobs, are paying well above the minimum wage in the state of Utah. And the reason for that is because they're competing, right? The reason the minimum wage was put in is because of sweatshops. And back when the minimum wage was put in place, everybody worked for factories, and the factory was the main source of employment in town. 85% of people are employed by small businesses now. So you don't have that. So all of those businesses, you didn't have the competition for employees like you have now, and especially like you have in a hiring freeze. So back then, a minimum wage was absolutely necessary. And so were labor unions, absolutely necessary, because there were no other options and there was no competition for employees. But anytime you find a place where there's competition for employees, you will see that in many cases, not all, and it depends upon the populations and things like that, that the that people hire for above minimum wage. And they will hire and add benefits and things if they can. So it's not, there's this impression that without a minimum wage, everybody would rush to the bottom. Well, if that's the case, why does any business pay any more than minimum wage? They pay because they're competing for employees. That's when it's healthy. If suddenly they're paying because the government requires that you have to provide a living wage, all of the economics and all of the business model goes out the window. And now somehow you have to figure out that calculation, and it's not based upon supply and demand. It's not based upon your cost of goods sold. It's not based upon anything. Suddenly it's like you are now a charity. And that's just not the way, that's not the way to handle business. If you want to make sure, I would much rather support a system that pays somebody a universal basic income, the UBI. I would much rather pay them a UBI from everybody being taxed than make employees more expensive to employers. Because that makes employees more of a liability and less hireable. I'll give you a perfect example. When I was living in Las Vegas, the unions down there, the food and beverage union, was threatening to go on strike, all of the casinos. And you had this really interesting dynamic. I've told this story before. If you've heard it on this show, I apologize, but it's really important here. Okay. All of the casinos on the Southern Strip, they were all making money hand over fist. So, you know, all of those down south. But on the northern part of the Strip, Glitter Gulch, every one of those was losing money. And here comes the Food and Beverage Administration, and they're making huge demands for increases. Well, they got the Southern Strip casinos to admit or to agree to the contract. But all of the, and I was doing consulting for one of the downtown casinos at the time. This is how I know this was going on. All of the downtown casinos told the labor unions, we can't pay more. Do you understand? We are losing millions of dollars. We are at risk of having our buildings torn down. And you're telling us we have to give a 25% increase to every member of our staff. We cannot do it. Look at our P&Ls. Look at our balance sheets. Look at our cash flow. Tell us where this imaginary money is. And the labor union said, no, sorry. We're going to go on strike unless you do this. So ultimately, the downtown casinos relented and they signed the agreement. And the labor union came out and they said, look what we did for all of our members. Look what we did. We represented you and we got you this huge increase. Do you know what happened the day after that agreement was signed? The downtown casinos cut their staff by 25 to 40%. So the labor union negotiated 25 to 40% of their employees right out of a job. Because when you make it an artificial factor that is not related to business, it's like we just assume, oh, you're a business, you can pay a living wage. No, it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. So if you want to keep some kind of minimum standard and that standard increases with inflation, I can discuss that. But when the minute you introduce living wage to me, I'm out. For entry level, I'm out. Because that is so damaging. When you make employers the piggy bank for your social issues, that is the minute you throw a wrench into everything. Just like Affordable Care Act, when they said, we'll make employers who are employing anybody over 25 hours or whatever it is, offer full insurance benefits. They were offering a social welfare program and they were asking employers to pay for it. And what happened as a result, the day after it passed, suddenly everyone who had a full-time job without benefits now had a part-time job without benefits. So it's anytime you introduce these social programs into employers, it's bad. It's bad. Don't fall for it. It's bad. Let's see. Michael says, you are okay philosophically with that, except we all end up paying for the gap you create when you have that program happening. When you underpay, you steal labor. We often support that through taxes and other. Also, we create a crisis via Maslow's hierarchy of needs. UBI is cool. It's cheaper for everyone. As I said, I would much rather support, if you think that it is a fundamental right to have your means covered, regardless of your education, regardless of your work ethic, regardless of your work experience, that you should be able to have all of your needs met when you walk into a job, regardless of any of those things, then that is social welfare. That has nothing to do with business. And so you should provide it in a different way. In the meantime, people should be paid based upon the value they bring, the experience they bring, and the work ethic that they bring. That is how you ensure sustainability. That is how you ensure profitability. That is how you ensure growth. And when you start taking other outside metrics, you are going to destroy commerce. And experience bears that out. Michael says, also, we should have one payer system for medical. I'm going to surprise you, Michael. I actually, if you want to say that healthcare is a right, I think the only way to do that is through single payer. And single payer is not the worst thing on the planet. There are countries who have successful single payer programs. Do they have issues in those programs? Yes. Yes, they do. But if you say on one hand, I want employers to pay for health insurance, mandated, or I want single payer, I'm going to choose single payer every time. Because I am not a fan of placing more labor burdens on employers. That hurts commerce, that hurts the economy, and that hurts employees. So you might be surprised. I'm not adverse if we have to decide that healthcare is a right. I'll have the single payer argument. It's this hybrid from the Affordable Care Act that is part on businesses and part on the government that drives me crazy. I can't stand that. So I'm actually open to the discussion. Jihab says, Michael, I feel sick. Can you give me money to go to the doctor? Scott says, after Obamacare, I went from 38 hours to 20 hours or less. I had three people in my family who went from full-time to part-time as a result of the Affordable Care Act. And when that was happening, being passed, I was in Dallas screaming at the top of my proverbial lungs that this was not going to increase coverage. It was going to decrease hours. One of the reasons I knew that is because I had lived in Hawaii for 4 years. And Hawaii, which was used as the model in many ways for the Affordable Care Act, along with Romney's deal, they had passed 25 hours or more full benefits. And I knew, just everybody I knew, had three jobs for 20 hours or less and no benefits. So it's like, anytime you introduce these artificial programs that are not based upon anything to do with the business, and most people don't understand that labor burdens on businesses are already unreasonably high. If they pay you $12 an hour, they are probably paying to the government another $6 to $8 on top of that. So you really cost them $18. Depending on the industry, it could be double the wage. If they're in the construction industry, odds are after workers' compensation that if you pay somebody $20, the actual cost that you are to that employee after labor burdens or to that employer is $40 an hour. So I'm not a fan, not a fan. Michael Tanner says those social programs are called unfunded mandates. They're wrong. And that's what, to me, that's what a living wage is. It's an unfunded mandate. Unfunded mandate. Scott says, if a business isn't paying you for your labor, then you should find a better job. From the looks of it, people are doing just that right now. If ever there was an example of the fact that supply and demand impacts wages more than a baseline government minimum wage, we are living that example right now. As the lower wage, the average entry-level wage, has been pushed up by $5 to $8 an hour, depending on where you live. It didn't take government to do that. It took a hiring crisis to do that. And that's not an artificial metric. That's a metric based upon business needs and supply and demand. So, and that's not an unfunded mandate either. So that's just, this is why I love the rabbit hole. We can go anywhere. We're in the rabbit hole. We can go anywhere you want. Any other thoughts or comments on that? We've been going for 2.5 hours now. Almost midnight. I still feel like it's early though as a result of daylight saving time. You get that feeling? And it gets dark so early now. I can't stand it. Anything else, my friends, that you want to talk about? Let me see if I had anything else that I saw. Michael says, well, it took bad health policy to drive COVID number up. I don't know what that has to do with the living wage discussion. And COVID drove the COVID numbers up. There are places where the number went much higher because of bad health policy, for sure. Scott says, DST, daylight savings ruins my circadian rhythm. I'm all for getting rid of it. Michael Tanner says, oh, stop whining. I had to stare into glass for 4-hour shifts. Oh, I'm not whining. just musing out loud. And I do have a day job besides this. So this is not the only thing that I do. I worked my day job and now I'm doing this. G-Hob says, is daylight savings time still relevant? It depends on who you ask. I've lived, you know, in Hawaii, there's no daylight savings time. Saving time. I always throw an S on there. G-Hob says, I read something about it saving strain on the power grid. Is that worth it, though? I think it was originally, wasn't it originally put in? I'm speaking out of place here. It was originally put in for farmers so that they could maximize their time. Certainly, electricity is part of that, because when people go to work, when work lights are on compared to when they go home, that's part of the equation. I don't think Arizona has a DST, and they seem to manage. But I'm not. The only thing I can tell you, I have not done a lot of research on this. So the only thing I can tell you is, I don't like it, and therefore it should change. Michael says COVID numbers are very high. Michael, I don't know if you've joined us on this program before. I haven't seen you comment before, I don't think. But we have gone in depth on COVID and how poor policy and the politicization of COVID has driven the numbers way up. So I totally agree with you. Scott says originally for factory workers without light, maybe also farmers. G-Hub says you should run on an anti-DST platform next time. You will get half of the vote for sure. Yeah, so maybe that's my number one platform. I told you a couple of things that I'd like to do, you know, if I was a member of Congress, get rid of daylight savings time and get the word tragedy into the dictionary. Tragedy? Yeah. Travesty and tragedy? Yeah. Michael says that means we can't even have events over 70 people. That means that we caused a lot of employment relocation. Yeah. And that's the other thing about the pandemic that everybody suddenly realized is that work from home works and commutes are awful and you could probably live somewhere else. Not in the events business like you are, Michael, but I currently, with the jobs that I do, I could live anywhere. As long as there's an internet connection, I could live anywhere. And so many people are finding that out. And so suddenly rural areas of the United States, places in Montana, small towns, are getting this influx of people. And businesses are actually, you know, talking about how to structure their wages if there's no commute and those types of things. So COVID is changing the world. It's changing the society in many ways. Like tonight we talked about depression from COVID, so many other things. I think I'm probably getting to the end. I think I'm almost there. G-Hub says, I don't have to drive 40 minutes to SLC every day now, thanks to COVID. Work from home was brought up so many times before, and the company always scoffed at it. Now, if they close the office and leased it out, everyone works from home now. Yeah, yeah. Now they close the office and everyone works from home. Yeah. Michael says, means we have a ton of employment friction, means not every square can fit in the round hole. We are terrible at retraining people. Yeah. Yeah. And some industries are taking huge hits now. And, you know, depending upon how big you are, a lot of companies are not surviving COVID. We're seeing the mom and pops close up. We're seeing the smaller businesses that have specific needs like yours, Michael. It's one of the reasons why I just wish people would stop believing random, unverified posts on Facebook and trust their doctor and medical professionals and get vaccinated so that we can save these businesses and we can save these jobs and we can get this country back to greatness. You want to make America great again? Get America vaccinated. That's what I'd love to see. And that's why I hate that it's been politicized, because there's more than lives on the line. There's jobs. There's all kinds of things. Michael says, talent rolls off the fingers. Not everyone can be as fast as me and do radio around the country. Did you mean fast as you or fat as you? Because you typed fat as you. G-Hub, good night, Jay. You're awesome. Good night, all. Thank you, G-Hub. Thanks for being one of our Twitch stream listeners. I do think I'll wrap up tonight. I think we're at a good point to do that. Remember, if you're just joining us tonight, I'm live every Tuesday and Thursday night, 9:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. But I also release content on YouTube and Facebook and Instagram every single day, usually. So be sure to follow there. And Michael did mean fat. I didn't want to say it if that's what you didn't mean. So if you're just tuning in tonight, join us live on Tuesdays and Thursdays and watch my channel, subscribe and follow and like so that we can continue to have these great discussions. And go to jmcfarland.com and become a member. $5 a month or more gives you great benefits and it allows me to keep doing this. So please check that out. And other than that, I will join you back here on Thursday night. Everybody have a wonderful midnight. Is it morning where you're at? I don't know. I'll talk to you soon.